Hi, this is Tony Robbins. What are you doing these days in your life? I don't know what's going on with you because you don't talk to me enough. Seems to be a one-way conversation. When are you guys going to start talking to me? Well, some of you are. I get the chance to read your letters, and I appreciate that very much. But I wanted to take a moment to visit with you today and share with you one simple, single understanding that when you really fully utilize it, can instantly change virtually any area of your life. And what I really like to do in this session with you is just stimulate you to think, sensitize you to this distinction of power that I've made, that once I understood it, it truly has changed my life. You know, most of you who spend any time with me know that I've spent most of my life constantly searching for ways to make changes in human behavior and feelings. I mean, when you think about it, we all want to change one or two things in our lives. We either want to change how we feel, or we want to change what we're doing. And I've constantly searched for those. And so I've mastered a whole series of technologies, you know, from earliest days with positive thinking kind of stuff to Gestalt therapy to neurolinguistic programming, Ericksonian hypnosis, and then now the development of some of my own neuroassociative conditioning tools. But as I've been immersed in all those things, the one thing I've always looked for is what could produce results for us at the fastest tempo? How can we create a change in an instant that really could last? And over the years, I've learned a lot of things and been real proud of what I've been able to share with people. But in the last 2 years alone, I began to focus not only how to produce changes rapidly in people, but how to produce what I call global changes. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, in essence, you could come to me and say, gosh, I want to stop biting my fingernails, or I want to be confident when I'm around, you know, authority figures, or I want to stop overeating in this situation. And using a variety of tools, again, my own, or tools like neurolinguistics or Ericksonian hypnosis, I could definitely assist you to do that and show you how to assist yourself. But I began to develop a new goal. And that goal is there an area of the mind that I could penetrate and I could help other people to penetrate within themselves without a lot of extensive detailed training that could help us to make one change that would change all kinds of things in our lives? The domino effect, if you will, a processional effect. That if you could just change this one thing, many things would change simultaneously. And over the last 2 years, as I've worked on neuroassociative conditioning and my destiny technologies, I've come up with a lot of incredibly simple tools that really do produce results. Not just results in one area of your life, but often multiple areas simultaneously. So of the many tools that I've developed that I consider to be simple and powerful, things that can create change so easily that almost anyone can use them immediately, the one I want to focus on today I call global metaphors. Now you might say, Tony, already it doesn't sound that simple. What is this metaphor stuff? What is a metaphor? Well, think about it. A metaphor is nothing but a figure of speech that usually implies a comparison between two things that really aren't alike. For example, you might compare like the fact that you feel a little hurt inside, you might call it a broken heart. Well, it isn't really a broken heart, but by describing it that way, you certainly have an impact on how you feel. Or if you say, I'm scarred emotionally, that's a metaphor. I mean, if we took your heart out right away, we'd see it wasn't broken. And if we looked at your emotions, if there were such a thing as a thing called emotions, we'd find out they really aren't scarred. And you know what? Most of us use metaphors continuously. They're a part of the human language. They're a part of the way that we communicate. But here's the challenge. Most of us rarely notice the impact we have by using these metaphors. Now, there's all kinds of metaphors that don't create negative impact. I don't want to imply that. A lot of them create positive feelings. Sometimes we say things like, well, you're looking at me with puppy dog eyes. Doesn't that make you feel a little different than you go, quit staring at me? You know, so global metaphors are not necessarily bad. Or if you say something like, I'm tickled pink. Listen, you're not being tickled and you're not pink. But it sure feels good to use that metaphor, doesn't it? For some people, life's a bowl full of cherries. For other people, it's a war. Do you think that makes any difference in the way you look at life, the way you feel about life, the way you approach your life? See, we have metaphors for everything. Now, you may not call it metaphors, but think of a metaphor as any time you start to create a comparison, when you use a word to describe something that it really isn't. When you use a metaphor, by the way, you're taking a quantum leap and transforming your experience. Global metaphors change the way we perceive, the way that we think, the way we feel, what we experience of our lives. See, you need to remember something, an organizing principle of everything I've taught you. It's simply this. We don't experience reality. We experience our representation of reality. Again, what does that mean? Well, I've given you many metaphors to describe this. Metaphors are an easy way to teach. One I think I taught you maybe in personal powers, I give you the example of how we feel is not based on reality, but what we focus on, how what we represent inside our heads, how we picture things, what we say to ourselves. For instance, I think I've given you the example in the past of maybe going to meet your husband or wife for dinner one night, and you're supposed to be there at 6:30, and you get there at 6:30, and they're not there. How do you feel? Well, no problem for most people. 6:45, Well, some people start to have a little change of state. 7 o'clock, some have an even bigger change of state. And some people, by the way, get worried. Some people get upset. Some get angry. What's the difference? The difference is not based on reality. It's based on the way we represent reality. And in this case, it's not being done metaphorically. The person who's worried is thinking things like, oh my gosh, what if this person was hit by a car? And they may be making pictures in their mind and representing to themselves a scenario that makes them feel fearful or concerned. Whereas the person who's upset is assuming a bunch of other things. They may be upset because they're representing inside their head that, gosh, this person really doesn't care, or they're not committed, or they're off with somebody else. And we have emotional reactions to however we represent our world. Now, the person may come through the door, and it was neither of those things. It wasn't that they didn't care, and it wasn't that they were in an accident. But during that time, during the time we were focusing in that way, representing things in that way, we felt those emotions. How does this relate to metaphors? We'll realize it's not life, but the way you represent life that determines the way you feel. So when you turn around and you say, gosh, I'm scarred emotionally, that is exactly how it feels. It does not feel just hurt a little bit. It feels scarred. And that metaphor will come up to make you feel the same way again and again and again. See, oftentimes we use metaphors out of convenience without looking at their impact. Again, both positive and negative. How do we normally use metaphors? Well, we use them, number one, to learn or to teach. See, oftentimes we can't understand something because we don't have the experience of it. A metaphor is a way of transferring understanding by taking something you already understand and attaching it to a new idea. For example, many people believe, even those of different faiths, that a man named Jesus Christ was one incredible teacher. His works have survived thousands of years. And the way he taught, the way he shared ideas and understandings often was through metaphor. He adapted his style of communication so that it met the understandings of the people he was speaking with. For example, when he went to fishermen, again, he didn't say, let's go recruit Christians. He said, I want to teach you to become fishers of men. Immediately, there was a whole set of understandings about how to get the job done then, because they knew how to fish. They knew what was involved, and they could apply those understandings to impacting people. While metaphors can certainly help us to understand things much more quickly, that's one of their powers, they can also sometimes, while they're empowering us, limit us just a slight bit. Because we've got to realize our metaphor is not the same as reality, but we start responding like it's identical. And a modern example of this would be studying physics. For years, people who were studying atoms were taught that an atom is like a solar system, in that in the middle is this nucleus, which is like the sun, and then revolving around it on the outside are protons and electrons. Well, with that understanding and using that metaphor, what rules come with that metaphor? What preconceived notions? Well, one would be that these electrons and protons stayed equidistant or a certain exact distance away from the nucleus as they revolved around it. But this isn't true. They vary in distance constantly. And as a result of this, a lot of people are locked into a mindset that kept them from being able to solve certain problems in physics. So we have to be selective in the metaphors that we utilize, because metaphors have tremendous power. They can help us share ideas. They can help us to share our emotion. They can intensify our emotion or lessen it depending upon which metaphor we select. I mean, think about it. All of poetry is really based on metaphor, isn't it? But we must know the impact of the metaphors we utilize, and we need to be conscious in our selection. Let's take a look at some of the impact of metaphors you may have that you're not even aware of, because you may be sitting there saying, metaphors, I don't use this word. I don't use metaphors. Oh, yes, you do. They're a living part of your language. Let's say, for example, what is life? And here's a nice way of thinking about metaphors, by the way. If you use the word is or like, those are good ways, or as, like, is, or as, are usually when you're starting to link things. You're taking something that isn't the same as what you're talking about and making it the same. So, for example, what is life like? Now, for some people, they say, well, life is like a war. Now, I want you to think about that one metaphor. If you adopt that metaphor with it, you begin to adopt a series of beliefs that affect the way you think and the way you feel about life itself, what you'd be willing to do and not do. A whole set of rules and ideas and preconceived notions come with any metaphor you adopt. So if life's a war, what's life like? Tell me. You might say, well, it's tough. Well, it means it's about death as well. You might say, well, it's going to be me against somebody else. You might say there are going to be battles. You might say, well, if life is really a battle itself, then maybe, you know, I'm going to get hurt. All of those filters will affect your decisions and your feelings. Now, some people say, no, life's not a war. It's not a battle. Life's a test, though. Well, great. What comes with the belief that life is a test? What comes with that global belief? Well, if it's a test, you know, again, maybe it's going to be tough. Maybe you better study. Maybe you better be prepared. You could fail. And some people look at life as a test. For example, I was reading an article not long ago where they interviewed Donald Trump, and he was saying, well, life's a test. You either pass or you fail. If you're not in first, then you failed. Can you imagine how that metaphor has affected his decisions in his life and how he feels emotionally? For some people, life's a game. Now, if life's a game, what would you believe about life? How would that affect you? As an ultimate filter to all your thinking and all your beliefs. Well, it might be fun. What a concept. It might be somewhat competitive. It might be a chance for you to really play a lot and enjoy a lot more. Some people say, well, if it's a game, then there's going to be losers. Other people say, well, it'll take a lot of skill. It all depends on what beliefs you attach to the word game, but with that one metaphor again, you have a set of filters that are going to affect the way you think and the way you feel. What if we thought life was sacred? I hope you do think that. But if that was your primary metaphor for life, some people say, well, then it would be something that you would cherish. Other people say, well, then I'd be really careful with it. What if you thought life was a dance? Wouldn't that be a little different? What comes with life being a dance? Well, it's something beautiful. It's something you do with other people. It has grace. It has rhythm. It has joy. Maybe it has sexuality tied into it. Who knows? Maybe it's a lot of fun. I'm not saying there's a right or wrong way of looking at life. Maybe life's a gift, right? Think about how your life changes and how you look at your entire life differently just by changing the global metaphor you adopt inside your head. Are we limited to metaphors about life? Oh, no. We got metaphors about our work, for example. Some people call it, yeah, I got to go to the prison today. You think that might affect the way you feel about what you do? Other people see it as, oh my gosh, I'm going to go be with my friends. I'm going to go join that team. I know a lot of business people who use global metaphors for their businesses, the businesses they own, and it's things like, well, it's my asset. And they look at people as either assets or liabilities. And do you think that affects the way they treat people, the way they think about people, the way they connect with people? That one belief changes it all. In my business, I think of it as a family. And you know what? That totally changes the connection I have with the people that I work with every single day because we're all one. We're all together. Some people look at it as a unified team, a team that's going to go out and win. Other people look at a business as being like a garden where every day you've got to do things to maintain it and somehow improve it so that someday you can reap a reward. See, again, the metaphors you select will affect you tremendously. And I'm here to tell you that these metaphors are going on whether you're aware of it consciously or not. That's the scary part, because you may have never consciously decided what metaphors you wanted to use to describe life. Where did you get your metaphors? Well, probably you picked them up from people around you. You may have picked them up from your parents or from your friends. And again, you didn't think about their impact. It just seemed convenient or fun to say, or maybe you didn't even think about it at all. It just became a habit. I'll give you an example of how I really learned all this, the power of metaphors, because certainly I heard the word metaphors before, but I thought of metaphors as only being stories, or maybe a quote would be a metaphor, like one that guided my life during tough times when I felt a little fearful was, you know, a ship in a harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were built for. And so that's a great metaphor. It instills a belief. It makes you think of yourself like a ship, and, you know, you got to make it through the storms and everything else, but that's what life is for. That's what life is about. But what I began to realize is that our metaphors can also be destructive. And how I came across this understanding happened in a meeting that I talked to you about with two of my friends. One was the CEO of one of my companies, and the other one was a good friend of both of ours. And a person came in the room and shared some information with all three of us. And that information was, you know, somewhat negative. In fact, it was quite negative in terms of its impact upon all three of us. But we all had a totally different response to it. The CEO of one of my companies at that time absolutely lost it. He went crazy. He went into absolute rage. I mean, so intense, he actually concerned me. I got rather angry, and my friend, he got mildly upset. What happened that day is I looked around and I thought to myself, what is going on here? Why is this guy so out of control? And I said to him, I said, what is it that's driving you so crazy about this? What's going on? He said, well, it's like, and by the way, I'll stop right there for a second. Think, he said the word what? Like. That should become a cue for you that you listen to. When people say it's like, or it's just as if, that should be a clue that they're about to give you a metaphor very often. He said, well, it's kind of like, you know, they got us in a box and they got a gun to our head. He was talking about somebody who was negotiating in a rather interesting way. Now, I got a question for you. Do you think your emotion would be somewhat intense if you thought somebody had you in a box with a gun to your head? It's not hard to figure out why he was in rage. And so for years, I've had people do things like that, and without realizing it, I've helped people to change how they were feeling by breaking up what I now call their global metaphor. So I turned to him and I said, well, what color is the squirt gun? He looked at me and said, what? Which, as you can imagine, broke his pattern. I said, well, what color is the squirt gun? Now you might say, well, what does that do, Tony? Well, what does it do if I say to you, don't think of the color blue, don't think of the color blue, don't think of the color blue, don't you dare think of the color blue. What are you going to think of? Color blue. Now remember, whatever we focus on, Whatever we represent in our heads, whatever is said to us, when we focus on it, it changes the way we feel. So when I say, what color is a squirt gun? I say it two or three times. He eventually has to picture this gun being a squirt gun, the one that was imaginary in the first place. And when it's a squirt gun, all of a sudden, do you think his emotion changes? That when he thinks there's a gun there? Sure enough, he starts to laugh a little bit and says, well, you know what I mean. I said, well, I only know one thing, because I knew he was competitive. I said, I know no one could ever build a box big enough to hold me. He looked at me and he grinned, a little sheepish grin. And he said, all right, I got it. I said, really what you're saying is that they did something here that wasn't really very fair. That's different than putting somebody in a box and putting a gun to their head. The way you're representing this experience metaphorically is making you upset. If you want to use a metaphor, use a more empowering one. Like, you know, these guys are like, we're playing a tug of war with them and they got more guys on their side right now. So that would be more empowering because it means we need to get some leverage on our side. That would be more intelligent, wouldn't you say? He started to laugh and said, yeah, but he normally uses metaphors like that. That's why he feels so darn intense all the time. He selects aggressive metaphors. I'll never forget in A Date with Destiny where I had this man who was describing things and he kept talking about how he's in so much pain in his life because everybody was always stabbing him in the back. He described a relationship with a woman in which he felt like what she did was when she rejected him, he felt like she took a particular appendage of his body and slammed it into a door. And you can imagine which appendage he was talking about. I mean, it was rather intense, as you can imagine. I mean, the bottom line is if you're feeling really bad about something, I'd take a quick look at what metaphors are you using to describe how you're feeling or why you're not progressing or what's getting in the way. Because oftentimes you're taking a feeling and you're making it into more than what it really is. I mean, what's the standard metaphor? Making a mountain out of a molehill. See, you don't want to get caught doing that to yourself. And again, you know what's neat though? Is this is so simple. Again, on this tape, all I want to do is expose you to a bunch of examples so you become sensitized to them. If you hear enough of these, you're going to start catching yourself and other people. And when you catch yourself, making a change is very easy. All it takes is a choice to change it or to ask somebody, is that really what you mean? Is that really what it is? Or is it more like this? And offer them an alternative metaphor. And oftentimes they'll grab it. Just like when I said to my friend, hey, is it really they got a gun to our head? Or is it more like this tug of war? Or you sometimes feel like in this negotiation, it's a seesaw. You know, sometimes we seem to be up, sometimes they seem to be up. And as you give people other metaphors, if they adopt them, it will change the way they think, the way they feel, and what they do. I'll never forget years ago, I was doing a seminar, a certification program, and I was doing it back in Scottsdale, Arizona. And in the middle of the seminar, about a week into it, this one gentleman jumped up and started screaming at the top of his lungs and like stabbing out at people with his bare hands, like he was holding a knife. And he started saying, I'm blacking out, I'm blacking out, I'm blacking out. Well, the psychiatrist in the front row said, he's having a psychotic episode. Fortunately, I didn't take his view of things, or I would have been in deep trouble, because maybe I don't know how to deal with psychotic episodes, but I sure know how to change people's states. And I didn't know it at the time, but I know how to change people's metaphors. So I came up to this guy and I yelled, okay, then just white it out. White it out. You know how to do it. Use that stuff when you were typing. White it out. And the guy went, huh? It just totally broke his state. And all these people that were running for him paused to see what was going to happen. I said, come on, do it. You know how to use it. Just white it all out. And all of a sudden, his face changed and his body changed. He started to breathe differently. And he looked at me and I said, so how's that? He said, well, he said, that feels a lot better. I said, well, sit down. And I went right on to speak. And everybody looked dumbfounded. And the psychiatrist was dumbfounded. I was kind of dumbfounded, except I had to look cool, like I knew what I was doing. So I just went on and continued, right? But what I'd done, I wasn't aware of it, is I had changed his metaphor. And by the way, I didn't have another challenge with that guy. And he came up to me 2 days later and he said, I don't know what it was the other day. He said, but I turned 40 that day. And he said, I just lost it. By the way, is that a metaphor? Losing it? How do you lose yourself? You're here. Hello. Are you here? I'm noticing. I'm talking. Let me see your hands. Now, we got to realize we oftentimes make these metaphors as if they're real. They're not real. They're just figures of speech. But we start responding to them like they're real. And he said, I just lost it. And he said, I was experiencing this unbelievable thing. Like I felt like stabbing out and jamming out because I was in this blackness and I felt like it was swallowing me up. He said, but boy, when I put that white out on there, he said, everything just brightened right up and I felt totally different. And he said, I haven't had a challenge with it since. He said, you know, I went and read the paper that day and I started thinking of new thoughts. And he said, you know what? He said, I feel fine today. And he was fine the rest of the time just by changing one little metaphor. And I didn't even know what I was doing then. Realize how easy it is to create a change. A woman came to me in a therapeutic context a few years ago, and she was a former Miss America. Very, very incredible lady, powerful woman who really cares about people. But she hadn't been able to sleep for years. Why? Well, simply because as a young girl, she was molested by her father year after year after year. I think it was from the time that she was approximately 6 or 7 years old up until the time she was about 14. And she tried to tell people and she tried to communicate it. And when she tried to bring it to the family, they all tried to deny it had happened because it was so shameful for them all. And as a result, she really beat herself up. And she'd been through every kind of therapy you can imagine. She was taking drugs to go to sleep. And so I sat down with her and I started working with her. And I said, well, you know, tell me, you know, what's going on? Why is this happening? Why can't you sleep? What's going on? And she didn't tell me at first what was going on. She first told me through metaphor. She said, I don't know. I just feel like I'm marble, like I'm stone. I'm shiny and bright on the outside. And everybody thinks I'm so wonderful. But on the inside, she says, I'm hard and I'm cold and I can't feel anything. And I said, well, you're marble, huh? And I said, zzz, zzz. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm drilling holes in the marble. She looked at me like I was crazy, which immediately interrupted her pattern. I said, well, let's see. Let's take a look in here. What do you see? Help me out. What do you see there behind that marble? And we looked through the little cracks in the marble. What happened there? She goes, well, it's really loving and warm in there. And that little thing that seems like nothing, see, when we use a metaphor, we kind of trance ourselves out. We start distorting reality. So why not distort it in a way that serves you? And as I got inside there, I started following everything she said with metaphors. And we entered in behind the marble. We jackhammered out the rest of it and got inside there and started flowing on this river of love. But it was stopped up at places. So what do you think we did? We brought out the liquid plumber and, you know, plumbed it all out and started flowing some more. And eventually we got to this room. And this is the room that kept her up at night. There was all these sounds coming out of it. And as we got closer and closer, and by my asking her questions and keeping her talking about metaphors, she told me that there was this man in the room, and he was playing the piano. And I said, you know, what's he playing the piano for? And she said, I don't know. I said, well, ask him. And she said, well, it's because he's trying to keep me awake, so I'll be protected in case my dad comes. I said, well, your dad's no longer here, is he? She said, no. I said, well, look how old that guy is. And by the way, when people use metaphors, they're highly suggestible because their metaphors are made up anyway. She goes, yeah, he is old. I said, isn't it time for him to retire? And she looked at me and smiled and she said, yeah. I said, well, go give him a big hug and thank him for taking such good care of you and tell him it's time for him to retire. Tell him he can come back and play though, but during the daytime, you know. And she did. And you know what was amazing? I'm cutting the story short for obvious reasons, but for 2.5 hours, we did this, one metaphor after another, changing them and changing them and changing them. And the next day, she was able to sleep without drugs for the first time. See, metaphors have more of an impact than we realize. And changing a metaphor can change your whole life. You got to discover what the metaphors are you're using so that you can change them consciously in a way that really enriches your experience of life. So what can you do if you find yourself saying things like, well, I'm at the end of my rope? Put the rope down. That's what you can do and walk away. You know, when people start doing that stuff, that's what I tell them. I go, I'm at the end of my rope. I say, well, you know, I don't say tie a knot and hang on for dear life, baby. I say, well, set the thing aside and walk over here. And they get this dumbfounded look on their face. And then all of a sudden they start to grin and it instantly breaks their pattern. Remember, whenever we have a pattern of looking at the world or making things up in our head, if we do something radical to interrupt that pattern and we keep interrupting it, pretty soon we can't get back to it. Remember the metaphor I used to teach you this, which was scratching a record. The only way you can feel a certain way is the same way you hear the same music over and over again. You got this record with a groove in it, but if I come along one day and I take a needle and I go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth across your record, pretty soon that record will never play the same way again. Do this to yourself. Anytime you find you've constructed your world in a way that creates limitations, interrupt it and replace it with power. Replace it with something that's more loving. Replace it with something that's more fun. See, if you find yourself saying things like, oh, I'm over the edge, maybe an alternative might be enjoy the slide. You know, there's all kinds of possibilities. Be creative. Be playful. Now, here's the challenge. A lot of people get like one metaphor and they filter everything through that one metaphor. Like everything in life is a war. Everything is a battle. It doesn't matter whether it be a relationship or whether it be their business or anything else. See, no one metaphor is the right metaphor. In fact, our real goal is to be flexible in using our metaphors. Even in my own business, where I saw my businesses as being my extended family, and I didn't even call it extended, it was my family. Because of that, I do almost anything for the people in my business. I care about them tremendously. And because of that, I could never fire anybody. How do you fire a family member? You know, and sometimes I needed to. So once in a while, I had to change it and say, okay, it's not my family. What this is a vehicle to reaching and impacting people. And there are parts of this vehicle that need to be updated or maintained. Or there's parts of this vehicle that have to be taken out and reinstalled with an updated version. The bottom line is if what you're doing isn't working, change your metaphors. You know, as I began to immerse myself in this idea that I now call global metaphors, metaphors that have a global impact in the way we think and the way we feel, I start seeing them everywhere. So like, haven't you had that experience? I think we've talked about it before where, you know, you buy a certain outfit or a car and then you see it everywhere. Well, I started noticing everything I could about metaphors. And of course, that led me into myths and stories, because the stories that have guided your beliefs in your life, the stories that have been told to you growing up, definitely are a filter as well. But sticking with metaphors, I came across a great quote from Gregory Bateson's daughter, who now is an anthropologist herself. She said, "Few things in life are more debilitating than a toxic metaphor." What a nice metaphor, a toxic metaphor. Now, I'll give you an example of that, by the way. Recently, I was doing a date with Destiny, and there was a woman that everybody was complaining about. And they were complaining about her before the seminar had even begun. She created all kinds of problems out at the registration area. And when she got into the room, she was complaining about how hot and how cold it was simultaneously. First, she complained it was too hot, then too cold, in a space of 5 minutes. She was upset with the person in front of her because that person was too tall. By the time I got up to speak, I couldn't go for more than about 5 minutes without her interrupting and trying to find how what I said really didn't work or wasn't really true or there was some kind of exception. Now, knowing a little bit about something called metaprograms, I pictured her as a mismatcher, but that really wasn't what she was. And I kept trying to do all the things I knew on how to change people, and they only worked temporarily because I was trying to make a change at an effect instead of the cause. I was dealing with one little challenge in one little area instead of looking at her as a global being. And what I began to do is realize she must have some metaphor about life that's making her such a fanatic for all these details and being almost mean-streaked in her approach. And finally, I asked her, I said, "What are you trying to gain by doing this?" I said, "What do you believe that makes you run around and do this all the time?" I said, "I know you must have a positive intent." I said, "What's your belief about life or about details or about, whether things are right or wrong?" She said, "Well, I guess I just believe that small leaks sink the ship." And I thought, wow, there it is in one simple metaphor. Think about it. If you thought small leaks sank the ship, do you think you might be a little fanatical about finding any possibility of a tiny leak since you're going to die? You're going to drown if you don't find it? And that's how this woman was. I mean, going to a seminar, I was like, boy, I better find the leaks before they find me, before I drown. And so we made a change in her metaphor. And what we began to do is teach her a new way of looking at herself, a new way of looking at life. That maybe it was a game, maybe it was a dance. We got her to combine a whole variety of these metaphors. And you should have seen this woman change. Not just in the way she treated other people, the way she treated herself. Because she was always finding the small leaks in herself, by the way. She was always noticing what wasn't perfect in herself and driving herself crazy. Not to mention, did she destroy her relationships. So we've got to notice what the metaphors are. Now, what are some examples of empowering metaphors? Well, one of the most empowering ones that has guided my life through tough times is the metaphor of seasons. Now, I've used it many times on tapes and in my books. Because when times are the toughest, you need to be able to make some kind of meaning out of that. And it's tough when you're in the midst of it. Your brain just goes, oh my gosh, this is going to go on forever. But what I began to do is, hey, life is like the seasons. And you know, I'm in winter right now. But the great thing is if you adopt this metaphor, what always follows winter? Spring, sun comes out. You're no longer freezing to death, right? Where all of a sudden you're able to plant new seeds. You get to notice all of nature and the beauty and the life and growth and all those wonderful things. And then there's summer. You know, you're doing everything right. You planted your seeds and it's hot and it's warm. And you either burn out your seed during that time if you're not careful, if you don't nurture it, or maybe you get tan. All depends on how you look at things. Once you got a metaphor, you can lay metaphors on top of metaphors. It's kind of fun. And then there's fall where you get to reap your rewards. And sometimes you planted the seed and you made it through the hot summer and you get to fall and it doesn't work out well. Well, that's true. Sometimes that happens in life, too. Sometimes before you reap, you know, a hailstorm comes in and destroys your crop. But see, if you believe in seasons, you know that you're going to get another chance. Also, as I began to look at that metaphor, I started to come up with the idea that, hey, in winter, you don't have to freeze to death. You could ski. Again, laying another metaphor on top of a metaphor. We need to find things that empower us. And during my darkest time, that metaphor almost always pulled me out. Or another one a friend of mine shared with me, who, by the way, wrote a book with a metaphor as a title. His name was Harvey McKay. It's called How to Swim with the Sharks and Not Get Eaten Alive. That's kind of a metaphor for how he felt about certain people he was doing business with and that you may be doing business with. By the way, one challenge with adopting a metaphor, you don't want to start seeing everyone as a shark. You know, seeing everybody as your friend, seeing everybody as like your puppy dog, or seeing everybody as your associate or partner in life is a great idea, except when that person is a shark, in which case they're operating from a different set of frames. They have a different set of rules. So you don't want to see everybody's a shark, everybody's your partner. You want to see the best in people and be able to change metaphors where it's useful. But the story he shared with me is one that shaped his life. And it was about persistence, because Harvey is one of the most persistent people I know. I have tremendous respect for him. And that story is the story of the stonecutter. His father told him that the reason he would never give up and the reason his father became so successful was because he believed in stonecutting. He said, "I want you, son, to become a stonecutter as well." He said, what a stonecutter does, he takes his big hammer and he smacks this giant boulder as hard as he can. and he hits it again and again and again and again. And you know what happens? He could hit it 100 times, 200, 300, and not even have a scratch. But he'd keep on doing it. Now, most people say, what, are you an idiot? Can't you see? It's not working. But a stonecutter's smart. A stonecutter knows just because you're not getting the feedback you want initially doesn't mean you're not making progress. Pretty good belief to have. He said, you keep hitting and hitting, and at some point, maybe on the second 100, third 100, maybe on the 1,004th hit, the stone splits open right there. It doesn't just crack. In one hit, it breaks open. And again, it wasn't that hit that did it. It was the constant pressure being applied to the challenge at hand. So Harvey's metaphor for himself is, I'm a stonecutter. That's what makes me successful. That metaphor works for me as well, maybe for you. I know years ago, I began to have this belief, and I was explaining to people that it didn't look like I was making progress, but I had my wrench on a fire hydrant, and I was pushing on that thing as hard as I could. And then once it opened, it was just going to keep pouring forever with just tremendous force. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. But that metaphor kept me persistent, kept me going. Your metaphors don't have to be elegant. They just need to be effective. Effective in getting you to take action. By the way, whole cultures are shaped by metaphors. A great example is if you decide to go trekking in Nepal and you meet people along the side of the road, strangers, people you've never met before. The one thing you notice most about these people, very much like Fijians, they're incredibly loving people. These huge smiles and this warm welcome you get as if they'd known you forever. And you know why? As they call to you, they call out a phrase, which in Nepalese means little brother or big brother. They just decide which one you are. I tend to get to be big brother because of my size most of the time. But whatever it is, little sister or big sister, everyone is addressed as their brother or sister. Would that change the way you approach people if that was the filter you had on every human being you met? See, as a society, we've adopted this idea about 10, 15 years ago of planet Earth or spaceship Earth. That sounded like a great metaphor, but it didn't work. You know why? You can't get emotional about a spaceship. We don't notice, we don't treat the Earth when we think of it as a spaceship the way we do when we look at it as, let's say, Mother Earth. What if you thought that everything that you received in your life, you were receiving from the breast of your Mother Earth, and that's what was nourishing your family? Some of you are like raising an eyebrow right now, but it's a different metaphor, isn't it? You'd probably be a little more sensitive. You probably wouldn't put some toxic waste right on your mother's breast, would you? You'd probably think a little different first. We've got to be really careful. We've got to think long-term in the development of our metaphors, not short-term. In fact, most boats or ships, as well as aircraft, we usually relate to them or describe them as a she, not a he. We have female names for them, or we say, take good care of her. Why do we say her? Why don't we say, take care of him? Or, you know, take care of Joe here, my boat. You know, we might treat it a little different, right? Yeah, I slap the thing around a little bit, but no, not a she. We're delicate, we caress her, we take care of her, we nurture her. The metaphor works. It enhances that area of life. And you know, there are many cultures, not just the country you live in, but what you do for a living provides another culture with different metaphors. For example, oftentimes lawyers have some challenges in their personal lives and can't imagine why. When they come home and try and apply the same metaphors that they use at work at home, they start to have a conversation with their wife or their husband, and next thing you know, they're trying to find out what's wrong with their argument and what their evidence is for backing up what they've said, and they try to have a debate. And that doesn't work too well in a personal relationship. Or I'll never forget working one time with a couple, one of whom was a quarterback, a star quarterback in the NFL. And he was dating and considering marrying, and she, him, a woman who was a pretty powerful movie star. And they had all these problems in their relationship, and most of them seemed to be coming from his upsets. He was upset with her all the time because she was breaking his rules. And almost all of them, though, came into focus as soon as I realized, wait a second, this guy is a quarterback. What are the rules for someone metaphorically who's playing a game constantly where they're a quarterback? Well, number one is you got to run the show. You call the plays. People respond to you. You're the director. You're making things happen. And as you're moving up to become the best, you have to be the star. Even though everyone else needs to be a star too, they need to be a star with you. And so the bottom line is, this person going off on her own, deciding what she wanted for her life and how she was going to be, and her being a star without having to catch a pass from him, that didn't go over too big with him. It created a lot of challenges. Or an example would be a jet pilot I did some work with. This guy is always finding something wrong with people. He's always seemed to get himself into fights. And the reason was he thrived on having an enemy. You know, without an enemy, there was no way he could really be the best he could be. Or maybe one of my favorites, because it was so simple to make a change in, was this man who was so disassociated. His family members and his kids just couldn't get through to him, didn't feel connected to him, and they really resented him because he didn't give any feelings and he was always directing them. And you know what he was? An air traffic controller. You know, as an air traffic controller, he had to make himself not be stressed. He had to stay disassociated. The guy on the radio heard his voice going, okay, well, just keep circling around for another couple hours. It'll be okay. Ah! You know, that wouldn't have gone over too big, right? So he learned to, when there's a trouble, say, yes, just make a circle and I'll get back to you. And I've got certain disassociated fashion works wonderful there. It doesn't work at home. So we got to be careful that we don't carry the metaphors that work in one context, like the environment we work in, into another context, like our relationships or our businesses or our families or our friends. So what are some of the metaphors that you use daily in your day-to-day life without thinking about it? Do any of them come from your work, for example? Or do you describe yourself in ways like I'm burnt out versus maybe you could have something like I'm recharging? Or do you get upset and say it's an eye for an eye? Maybe you need to come up with a different metaphor, one that's less intense. Or instead of feeling like you've got a mountain full of work to do or millions of things to do, maybe you've got a few things to do and you start taking that mountain and representing it as a stack. Maybe that'd feel a little different. You know, you want to make sure you set yourself up to win the game. And the way to win the game is pick the right metaphor. Let's take a second look at relationships. What are the metaphors you have for relationships? Is the person you're in a relationship with your partner in life? Are they your team member? Are they your lover? Are they your better half? Or do you talk about them as your dictator, the old ball and chain, the old lady, the old man, you know, that jerk and idiot I live with? You know, do you think those metaphors might make a difference in how they feel? I'll never forget, I had this one lady in a Date with Destiny seminar. Every time she talked about her husband, she talked about this jerk I'm with, this idiot. And so I turned to her and I said, ma'am, I'm sure you have a lot of challenges and I'm sure this man has made a lot of mistakes. And I know you haven't made any. But I'm just curious. Do you think your relationship's going to get any better as long as you hold that he's a jerk and an idiot? I said, also, notice what's happening here. You call him a jerk and idiot. And the times he's talked about you, I hear him say things like, you're the love of his life. Or you're his better half. Or you're his gift from God. Maybe you ought to re-examine the metaphor you're using to describe him to yourself and to other people. And pick something that's more appropriate. Because sometimes we use a metaphor so often it becomes habitual and we start thinking the metaphor is real. And it's just not. How about kids? What are your metaphors for your kids? Are they the rugrats? You know, one of my friends who obviously doesn't have kids used to have a metaphor, he called them barfers. You know, because all kids do. Whenever you're around, they barf all over you. So as long as you hold that metaphor, can you imagine how he responded? He just recently, by the way, got to fill in for Santa Claus at a department store, and he didn't want to do it. A bunch of us put him up to it and set him up so he had to do it. He got to have hundreds of these barfers come and sit on his lap. And you know what? Most of them, with one exception, didn't barf. And the bottom line is he got a whole nother view of what children are about, and he got to change his metaphor. And now he calls them cuddlies. And even get my change the way you feel? You better believe it. Brats doesn't usually make you want to have more of them, nor does it make you want to take good care of them or nourish them. So you got to really make sure you got the appropriate metaphor in each area. Now, how about the metaphors for your body? What is your body? Is it a machine? Is it a disaster? You know, is it an opportunity for growth? Is it a vehicle? Is it the temple? See, most people don't treat it like it's a temple. I can tell you, in Date with Destiny recently, last November, about 90 days ago, this is January when I'm chatting with you here, there was a gentleman who we learned to call Maestro, because in Date with Destiny, we have people adopt a metaphor for how they want people to respond to them and treat them during the weekend. And Maestro was just this wonderful guy who was extremely overweight. They've been trying to lose weight through every diet you can imagine. But when I got him up on stage and we did one of these things I call a rules realignment, so a special technique we have for changing the rules that your brain uses to make decisions, as we got through it, it became clear that he associated being fat to being spiritual. Because he had all these metaphors of that in order to be spiritual, what you had to do is be like the giant guru, you know, in India. And so sure enough, he actually linked that to being more. And he thought, you know, if you're this big, then the only people that are going to get through to you are spiritual people because other people are going to be turned off by your fat. He said, I really think that, you know, he said, I know it doesn't make any sense, but he says, it just feels real to me that fat equals spiritual. And so I gave him a metaphor. I said, well, I don't think that. He said, I think God loves fat people. I said, well, you know, I think God loves everybody, but I think what he does with fat people, he just sticks them on a skewer and roasts them above hell. You should have seen his face. Now, obviously, I don't believe this, but it was a major pattern for him. And he got the picture in his head. It was pretty intense. And we began to work on a better metaphor for his body because he said his body was nothing. So, well, what is your body? What's it like? He said, it's like nothing. It's like just there. It's like, it's just a vehicle. I said, is it a quality vehicle? He said, well, it doesn't matter if you have quality vehicles as long as it gets you there. So we got him to adopt the idea of a temple. And you know what? That was the only major change. With that, a bunch of his rules changed because when he went to pick up food, he said, would I put this in a temple? Because he's really a wonderfully beautiful spiritual man. He even began to change the music he listened to. He used to listen to some music so loud that everybody around him was concerned he was hurting his eardrums. And he came back, and he's come back to several Date with Destinies as a support staff. And he said that, you know, he doesn't even listen to the same music because he says, you know, is that really doing my temple any good? said, I want to take care of my temple. By the way, he's lost 90 pounds in the last 90 days simply by adopting that metaphor and adopting it fully. I mean, living it every single day. It's become habitual to him. And he said that once in a rare while, if he finds himself going down an old aisle that used to be familiar, he just pictures that body in a skewer above hell. And he said, that's all it takes is a metaphor to knock him right out of it and get him out of those aisles he doesn't belong in. One of the most important distinctions that I made about global metaphors, having utilized them so much and worked with people on an ongoing basis, is that whether people know it or not, they've got global metaphors for themselves. They have metaphors for what they do for a living. And the challenge is, if you don't consciously select your own metaphors, then what happens is your environment tends to create the metaphors for you. And sometimes those metaphors are disempowering, not empowering. I know for myself, for example, you know, people used to ask me, well, what do you do? What are you exactly? I mean, you're not a psychologist, and, you know, are you a motivator? And I thought, no, I'm not a motivator, because I thought, motivator, what a terrible metaphor. You know, you pump somebody up, and, you know, a little bit later, they drop right back down again. You know, it's like taking a warm bath, and I've never considered myself just to be a motivator. Hopefully what I do helps people to motivate themselves by having them change some of their core beliefs and helping them develop strategies on how to produce consistent and specific results. But being a motivator is not what I want to be known as. So some people say, well, gosh, if you don't know what you are, I know what you are. You're a guru. And I got to see that in Life magazine and newspapers. And sometimes to this day, media will cover me as the guru of something. I don't want to be somebody's guru. And I'm not any better than anybody else. And I'm not here to go out in the world and be everybody else's leader they're going to come pay homage to. That's not what I'm about. So I thought, well, I'm a teacher. I thought, oh, no, I'm more than just a teacher, you know, humble as I am. There's got to be something more. And somebody said, you're a comedian. I thought, well, that's a nice compliment, but there's some serious stuff here. So I finally came up with, I'm a peak performance consultant. Well, that's accurate, but it's not very emotional. It didn't really create the emotion inside of me. We all need to find a metaphor for describing who we are, what we do. And one day I finally got it. I'm a coach. I thought, that's really what I am. What is a coach? To me, a coach is somebody who really cares. It's somebody who's warm and committed, and they're your friend. They also are the person that's going to challenge you. They're not going to let you off the hook just because they're your friend. They're the kind of person who knows. They've got knowledge and they've got experience. They've been there before. They have lots of distinctions. And the key is, yes, they do teach you new information, new strategies, and new skills and how to get results that are measurable. But a good coach affects your beliefs. And a good coach gets you to not only know what to do, they get you to do what you know. And that's when results really change in our lives. And I thought, that's what I am. And by the way, a coach isn't any better than the people they're coaching. In fact, some coaches coach people that are better than them. They just seem to have a few distinctions because that's been their area of focus. And you know what? As soon as I started using that metaphor for what I was, that I'm a success coach, I helped to coach people on how to achieve what they really want more quickly and more easily, it changed the way I thought about myself. It made my work warmer. It made me enjoy everything I was doing. I thought, yeah, that's who I am. I'm a coach. I've also found that having metaphors to describe what my seminars are really helped me out tremendously to be more effective and help me to translate to other people what they were really about. Now you say, well, that's just in the seminar business, right? Wrong. It's true of your business. It's true of your avocation. You got to create a metaphor that creates a greater sense of richness and joy and fun and playfulness. Then you'll get more out of yourself. I'll give you an example that's measurable. I know several years back, PIE, P-I-E, the trucking service, they had some major challenges, and they found that 60% of all their shipping contracts were erroneous. It was costing them more than $250,000 a year. Well, they did an intensive study, and they found out that 56% of these errors were based on misidentification of containers. Well, they brought in a man named Dr. Deming, an American consultant who went over to Japan and whose philosophies on management and quality have been adopted wholeheartedly by the Japanese. In fact, they give away each year the Deming Award. It's the highest award a Japanese company can receive, and it is always broadcast on national television. In fact, over there, it said in the Wall Street Journal that Deming is considered to be up there right next to God, at least in the business circles. The bottom line is, based on their understanding of Deming's work, they decided to change the view that the workers had of themselves to get them to be more quality oriented. And instead of seeing themselves as workers or truckers, they started telling people, you know what you guys are? You're craftsmen. At first, people looked at it kind of funny, but then they got hooked on the idea. They said, yeah, I'm a craftsman. And they kind of teased each other and smiled about it. But you know what? When you adopt a metaphor, along with it, you adopt a set of rules about how to think about yourself and how to behave and what to do. As a result, in less than 30 days, they cut their 60% erroneous shippings down to less than 10%, saving more than $250,000 a year. Metaphors pay. Metaphors make the difference in how you feel. Metaphors change the way other people see you. If you don't set the metaphors for who you are and what you're about, and you don't share them with other people, they're going to make up their own metaphors. And by the way, the more you understand about what other people's metaphors are for themselves, the more you'll be able to predict how they're going to behave. Again, if somebody sees themselves as a shark versus a teddy bear, there's a whole different set of behaviors that come with that, aren't there? I'll give you an example. Our interview this month is with Marva Collins. This woman is absolutely incredible. 30 years ago, she got involved in the public education system in Chicago in the inner city. She looked around and saw second graders that had no desire to learn anything. They were bored, they were frustrated, people had given up on them. And she thought to herself, this is ridiculous. She said, the problem is not the kids, the problem is us. And she made some decisions that she was going to change it, that she had the power to do that. And she threw out all the textbooks that they were using that time that said things like see, spot, go, and she replaced them with Shakespeare. You're going to get a chance to hear just a few of her kids as well, because I interviewed them. These kids' lives are changed by this woman. I mean, they understand who they are and what they're capable of. She has helped to shape these children's destinies by helping them to adopt a set of beliefs and giving them some reference experiences that no one else could possibly dream of. Now, this woman is committed. When you listen to her on the tape, you'll get a sense of what her intensity is. And she has found ways to teach kids what things mean, what they're capable of, like few people I've ever met. So please take the time to listen to the interview. But I wanted to read you her description, because I asked her what her metaphors were for her life. Like, what is a teacher? And this is her description. She pulled out this piece of paper that she'd already written. She was very clear in her metaphors. And it says this: I am a teacher. I am as ancient as Jesus himself or Socrates. I am more than ancient. I am eternal. I mold my students for the future by making today different. My classroom is a workshop where all children find the opportunity to give might to their brains. Here they can plumb the ether and shackle the lightning. Few minor metaphors there. With those kinds of metaphors, with those kinds of beliefs, she's able to take kids who are dyslexic, who have learning disabilities, who have no desire to learn, and literally turn them around. Marva is a master of metaphor, and so she's a master at teaching. Kids learn through metaphor. So do big kids called adults. In fact, this month our book summary is One Up on Wall Street with Peter Lynch. Remember, Peter's the guy that if you would have invested $10,000 with him when it was at Fidelity Magellan Fund, that money within 10 years was worth $190,000. Now, in the internet age, that may not sound like very much, but most of the people that made money in the internet age lost all that money, and these companies continue to be profitable. So Lynch will show you, whether you're the average investor or whether you're the person who's already making a ton of money in the market, how what you're doing is really working and how you can take advantage of the greatest possible consistency in results. Anybody can make money once in a while and talk about a return they've gotten. But the truth is, over a 10-year period, 95% of investors lose money. Now, if you were part of that big bubble that happened on the internet, you know what I'm talking about. So be sure to review this month's One Up on Wall Street. By the way, what are some of the metaphors we use around people where we talk about books? Well, books to me are like treasures, because buried inside them are the resources that can give you anything you want for your life. And what's one we could apply to people? Don't judge a book by its cover. Speaking of empowering metaphors, one of the most simple and powerful metaphors that was offered me that really helped me get through some tough times where I looked like there was no way out. By the way, when you start thinking there's no way out, you must be using a metaphor that you're in a room or in a box or something like that. But one that really did help me a lot was simply the metaphor that God never closes a door without opening a window. There's always a way, or God never closes a door without opening another one. That there's always a way around anything, that there's never an end, there's always a continuum. I'll never forget a time when my son Joshua came to me from school, and I think he was about 6 or 7 at the time, and a child at school, another child that he used to play with, one of his little friends, was climbing on some of the equipment and fell off and broke his neck and died. And I came home and Joshua was crying hysterically. And everything people tried to tell him and explain to him verbally about, you know, why it had happened, what was going on, nothing had worked. So I sat down with him and I said, honey, I said, I know how you feel. I said, but you know, I think the challenge is that, you know, while you miss him, when you have the right to miss him, and you should feel those feelings, you should also realize that the reason you feel this way is because you're a caterpillar. And he said, what? Kind of broke his pattern a little bit. I said, honey, you're just a caterpillar. And you're thinking like a caterpillar. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, what happens to caterpillars at some point? There's a point where most caterpillars think that they've died. They think it's over. They think life is ended. When's that? He said, oh, yeah. He says, well, when that thing starts wrapping around them. I said, yeah, that thing starts wrapping around them. And pretty soon, the caterpillar gets buried by all this mass of stuff. And you know what? If you were to open up that thing it's buried under, the caterpillar's no longer there. It's just all this mush and goo and stuff. And most people, including the caterpillar, even the caterpillar that's transforming there, it's beginning to transform. It's not dying, it's transforming. You understand? It's going from one thing to something else. And I said, pretty soon, you know, that caterpillar even thinks that life's over. But what happens is the caterpillar comes together, and what does it become? He says, a butterfly. I said, yeah, and can other people see that? Can the little caterpillars on the ground see that this caterpillar became a butterfly? He said, no, they don't see that. I said, that's right. And finally, he breaks out of the cocoon, and what does he do? He said, he flies. I said, yeah, and he doesn't fly right away. He gets out, and the sunlight comes down, and it dries off his wings, and then he goes out and flies, and he's even more beautiful than when he was a caterpillar. And I said, is he more free or less free? You tell me. He said, oh, he's much more free. I said, you think he has more fun? He said, yeah, he's got less legs to get tired. I said, that's right, he does. He doesn't need his legs anymore. He's got wings. And I said, honey, I think your friend's got wings now. And they said, you know, it's not for us to decide when somebody becomes a butterfly. And we think it's wrong, but I said, I think God has a better idea when the right time is. I said, you know, we may think summer should be here now. I mean, you know, right now it's winter and you want it to be summer, right? But God's got a different plan. You know, sometimes we got to just trust that God knows how to make butterflies better than we do. And when we're caterpillars, sometimes we don't even realize butterflies even exist because they're up above us. But maybe we should just remember that. And he'd stop crying, obviously, and he'd smile, and he'd give me a big hug, and he said, yeah, I bet he's a beautiful butterfly. Metaphors can transform. Select them carefully. Select them intelligently. Select them in a way that deepens and enriches the experience of your life and the people you care about. Become a student of metaphors and become sensitized to them, and your whole life can change. Anytime you hear a metaphor that creates limits, just step in and offer a new one. Offer a new possibility. Break a pattern and give them a new choice, including yourself. So what's your assignment for this month? It's real simple. I want you to sit down and I want you to take out pen and paper with your journal. Now, you have a journal now, don't you? I'm not going to come chase you, but I may find you someday and see, do you have a journal or not? And you're going to tell me yes, right? Take out your journal and I want you to write down the following. Number one, what is life? And I want you to come and write down, number one, the metaphors you already linked to it. In other words, life is like what? It's as if life was what? And just brainstorm everything you think of it, because I bet you got more than one metaphor you link to life. When you're in a lousy state, you probably call it a battle or a war. When you're in a good state, maybe you think of it as a gift. But I want you to write them all down. And then I want you to decide, out of the list that you make, if life is this, then what does it mean to me? Like, if life is sacred, what does that mean? If life is a dream, what does that mean? If all the world's a stage, what does that mean? Each of your metaphors, by the way, will have benefits and they may have limitations. And all the world's a stage may be great because it may mean that, hey, you get a chance to go out there and make a difference and do something and you'll be heard. But also may make you be a person that's always performing. You don't want to be that. You want to be real. So take a look at the metaphors you have available. I want you to also make a list, number two, of all the metaphors you link to relationship or marriage. Take a look at those metaphors. Are they empowering or disempowering? And then again, just being aware of your metaphors can change them. See, conscious awareness alone can transform things because your brain will start to say, ah, that doesn't work. That's ridiculous. And you can adopt a new one so easily. That's the beauty of this technology. It is so darn simple. And thirdly, I want you to pick another area of your life that impacts you most, whether it be your business, whether it be your family or your children, whether it be your ability to learn. What are your metaphors for what learning is? So I want you to pick the third one for yourself, but write down the metaphors you currently use, brainstorm them out, look at their impact. Ask yourself, what are the consequences, positive consequences and negative consequences of this metaphor? And then after you've done that, see if you can't create some new ones you've never thought of before and decide, from now on, I'm going to think of life as these four or five things to start with at least. Life is not a war. Life is not a test. Life is a game. Life is a dance. Life is sacred. Life is a gift. Life is joy. Whatever it is for you. And decide you're going to live those for the next 30 days. So if somebody asks you, how's it going? You might turn back to them and say, the gift is being enjoyed. They'll look at you and say, what? So nothing. Just my global metaphor for life. I'll say, what's that about? Say, listen to the tape. I will look forward to being with you again next month. Until then, enjoy your metaphors and live with passion.